magical place we could go. So close your eyes and make a wish for the skies with the angriest, flappiest birds, and the seas with ridiculous fish. The Dutch Arcade Show is here again. It's Friday night and I'm with my friends, Eli, Jared, and Mike most of the time. Mike, come on, let's go to the Dutch Arcade Show.
Hey guys, what is up, and welcome to the Touch Arcade Show. This is episode number...
This is the big 400.
Episode number 400.
Hell yeah.
I am Jared, and with me is Eli, and together we are the hosts of this podcast, which is the official. It is not a knockoff or a clone show or anything like that. This is the official podcast of TouchArcade.com, the number one best resource for mobile gaming news and reviews, and that also includes... Android and Switch and all sorts of good. If it's gaming and you can take it with you, it's probably Touch Arcade is where you want to go.
You know what, Jared? The mountains are blue. That means it's time to podcast, baby.
The mountains are blue. This beer is for you. Well, that's not a very good rhyme. So as I mentioned last week, we have absolutely nothing planned for this special 400th episode. So it's just going to be a regular
show. I mean, 400 episodes is bananas, right? So like if that... How many? All right, so
it's like 7.5 years. I just did it on my calculator.
400 times, well, I don't know, what? 400
divided by 52 weeks in a year, and you get roughly 7.5 years of podcasting, give or take, because you know there's some weeks we've missed, and not every year I think has 52 weeks or something like that. But
well, that's the more impressive stat to me is that is almost 17 days of us talking nonstop. If you went back to episode one,
that's a good
and listened to everything good. You could do a actually, 17 day bender of.
I would love if somebody would do that, like for a marathon for charity or something. The other thing is that we restarted at one when Brad rebooted the podcast.
Oh, yeah. So it's probably a little bit more.
So I think there's like 12 or 13 episodes before that happened.
Yeah.
From like the very early first year or two of Touch Arcade. So,
yeah. And there were like bonus interview shows that didn't get numbered. So,
right. So we're 700 and or 400 and then some a little bit. So, still pretty impressive, though. I'm pretty proud that we've been able to keep this show rolling for so many years.
Yeah, that's been awesome. That's like
episode 400.
Makes this like a real podcast.
I know. You'd think that we'd get like featured on iTunes or something someday, but I guess not.
We got featured once, kind of.
Did we? Oh, yeah, we did get kind of featured. That's right.
Yeah, after I ran into the podcast guy at WWDC and I was like, I've done every single thing that you guys ask of us. To have like the best iTunes presence possible. How do I get any kind of featuring? And then we got featured for like a day.
Like, okay, I'll throw you a bone. Kiss my ring and I'll throw you a bone. It's kind of a shame, but you know, as always with the site itself and this show, tell your friends. I feel like podcasts especially spread by word of mouth. So, you know, if you know people that want to listen to a couple guys talk about mobile gaming stuff, as well as lots of off-topic tangents, recommend our show to them. You can just search Touch Arcade on iTunes and it'll come up with our podcast, I believe, right? So
should, yeah.
Hopefully, if we have pissed Apple enough, they pissed them off enough that they've demoted our keyword term or something. But so speaking of off-topic tangents, I had something I was going to talk about this week.
Yeah, let's hear it.
I am buying my first PC in like 25 years.
Really? Are you building it? Do you need help?
I'm not building it. And so this goes back to we talked about last week or the week before. I bought that Mortal Kombat arcade machine, right?
Yeah.
And so now I have fallen down the rabbit hole of like the mod community for this thing,
as expected.
And so you know, originally, like one of the most popular things is you can mod it with like a Raspberry Pi pretty easily,
mm-hmm.
and get it running like RetroPie, which runs a bunch of old consoles and arcade games and stuff like that. Which you think would be fine. I mean, the thousands and thousands of options for arcade games to run on your little arcade cabinet.
Are you building a MAME machine? Is that what you're doing?
That's what I'm about. Well, the Pi is probably it should be good enough, right? But for me, it's not, because I really wanted to be able to play a lot of these Dreamcast games. I still have my Dreamcast, and I have like a very fighter-heavy library of games. And so I thought it'd be awesome to be able to play those Dreamcast fighters on this arcade cabinet that I have. And so the Pi, unfortunately, doesn't run stuff like... It doesn't run 3D stuff very well at all. It's like... where is this? Oh, PC. Okay, so it doesn't... The Pi won't run stuff like that. It'll run a lot of like old 2D stuff like Genesis and Super Nintendo and old Nintendo and stuff like that. And a lot of 2D arcade games. But when it comes to like 3D things, not so hot. And plus like some of the more advanced arcade boards like the Naomi boards, which specifically has something like Marvel vs. Capcom 2, you're not going to be able to run stuff like that. And Killer Instinct is also notoriously fickle with emulation. So you need something powerful to run stuff like that. So if I wanted like a fighting game heavy arcade cabinet, I was going to be kind of out of luck with the Raspberry Pi. And so I started poking around looking about how to build like a cheap emulation PC, because I don't really want anything crazy.
Dude, building PC is easy as fuck. Like, we can do it over Skype if you need help. Like, I...
Well, it's easy, but it's like, how much do I really want to spend on this thing? You know what I mean? Well, and even like $200 or $300 seems to be the very low end.
Yeah, so that's just what I'm pulling up for you, is this website called Logical Increments.
Okay.
And so what this is you basically like kind of figure out like what you want. Mm-hmm. And then they kind of like put together like, so entry level, they say is going to be like $450 for like an okay gaming computer-ish sort of thing.
Right.
But I don't know, like, if I'm sure there's like build guides for actual like MAME machines that are like, hey, here's what you need.
So here's the interesting conclusion that I came up with, is that, okay, building a PC, just even if you don't want it to be like the craziest gaming PC ever, you're still in for a few $100 at least. And then you can try and source like used stuff and get the cost down. But even still, it's getting a little crazy, and it's a little bit beyond the scope of what I wanted to do. But what I've come to learn is that what a lot of people are doing is like a cheap emulation PC is, you know, companies like Lenovo and Dell and HP produce these sort of like business centric lines of computers.
Oh, yeah. Like the NUC. Intel NUC was one of them.
Well, the NUC is like, those are kind of actually expensive, but those are like very tiny mini PCs or whatever. But I'm talking more like very standard, like all in ones, pre built, so that like a company can buy like 1,000 for its workforce or whatever.
Yeah.
Or like when I worked at Verizon, I worked in a call center. And so there was like 400 of us on one floor, all with our own cubicles and computers and stuff like that. So these are tailored for like businesses to buy, or schools too, buying like a bulk amount of like, you know, decent PCs for like workload stuff. Not really for gaming at all. But there's a couple very specific models out there that have like pretty decent CPUs in them that have integrated graphics. And in some cases you can actually add a graphics card to it. And then, you know, with a decent set of RAM, you can actually put together like a pretty impressive little gaming PC by getting one of these cheap, you know, because businesses will replace their computers every whatever 5 years. So even like a 5 year old Intel like i5 line has like a lot of power in it still. And you couple that with even like a moderately okay graphics card and like a cheapy Dell tower that you get for $50 off eBay. Then you can do like an okay gaming PC for like under $200. And so actually the one that I ended up going with was recommended by this YouTuber named ETA Prime, who does all sorts of this stuff.
Oh, well, if someone on YouTube told you it's...
Yeah. Well, it's this Lenovo, they're called, it's like a mini PC, kind of like a NUC, but it's about the size of like a Wii.
What's
and
it
so
called? I'm going to look
this. It's called the Lenovo M93P. And tiny, put tiny in there, because you can get a tiny version, you can get a sort of big version, and then you can get a normal size.
Okay.
So see that little thing? It looks like a Wii.
Yeah.
Basically, it has an i5 in it with reasonably okay integrated graphics, and the one I got has 8 gigs of RAM in it already, and like a 250 gig SSD and stuff like that. And so, like, right out
for
of the
$50, you got this?
$150.
Still, that's pretty good.
No, it's not bad at all. I specifically went with that one because I could have got cheaper if I went with the bigger towers. and you also have the benefit of you can actually add a graphics card to one of those. Like too small to add anything to. But I sort of didn't care. I feel like it's going to run anything I want to run for that arcade cabinet. But if I ever wanted to build a emulation PC for like my TV in my office or my living room or something like that, I probably would still go this route rather than build a fresh PC.
Yeah, I didn't think about the buying an old, because like with those emulators, like you really don't need like top tier shit. Like best case, you need like a kind of okay video card.
Yeah, and for emulation, by and large, the CPU power is what's going to matter the most. And then if you get into multi-core stuff and GPU performance, that can help with a lot of like the bells and whistles the emulators have. Like if you want to run like a filter that has like crazy scan lines or something like that on top of the emulator, then that stuff can come into play. But just like straight up running the old games in an emulator is more CPU usage than anything. And so this little thing that I got has an i5 that runs at 2.9 gig and can be scaled up to 3.6 or 7, something like that, which is like fairly decent, and can run Dreamcast in full 1080p, 60 frames a second, and run a lot of GameCube stuff fairly well, PS2 a little bit. Anything beyond that's a little bit crazy, but I don't know. I feel like it's kind of cool for $150. So my big project next is going to be trying to mod out my arcade unit and getting this thing in there.
That's
and,
cool.
Yeah.
Well, you know, there's this like whole new scene. Well, new in emulation terms, basically, but new scene of like really crazy up-resing through like these different like filters and stuff like that. Like I've seen, and that's where you get into these like builds where it's like, oh, it's a $2,000 gaming PC to run GameCube games, because you're like running like 30 different graphics filters on top of it to run it like 4K and
which all this other insane shit. Which I don't understand at all. Like, I feel like, you know, Dreamcast stuff in 1080p, like, it looks awesome. Like, it's nice and clean lines and stuff like that. And so I can sort of understand that kind of stuff. But, like, anything beyond that, I don't really see the point, especially when it's, like, early 3D where the textures aren't that great anyway and stuff like that. So what's the point?
Yeah.
But, like, you know, a lot of people do that with PSP games, too, because when you're playing those, if you have a PSP emulator, which this thing can emulate PSP really well, you're playing what was designed for a much tinier screen, much lower resolution screen. So when you blow it up onto a TV or a larger screen, it looks kind of butt. But if you run it in, like, 4x resolution, it looks like a PS2. So that makes sense to me, too. But some of the other stuff, it just seems like, what's the point?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think stuff like that's cool, but it's like at the same time, like for me, like a big part of emulation is what I like is like the emulators that are like very precise. And it's like, oh shit, this looks exactly like how I remember it, except like now it runs at 1080p or whatever.
Right. Yeah.
Instead of like, I mean, the filters look cool. I mean, don't get me wrong. Like particularly like saw something on Reddit not long ago, like post this insane like top end emulator screenshot series of like Link to the Past maybe, and it looked nuts, but I was like, that's not how that game is supposed to look, man. Like it's not supposed to look like a weird cel-shaded cartoon, you know? It's
right,
you know.
Yeah, so. I agree, it kind of messes with that. Somebody was running Mortal Kombat 2 with like all these crazy real-time shadows and stuff enabled, and I was just like, yeah, it looks neat, but it's not and like the smoothing filters I will never understand. Like I want my stuff to look like pixelated like it did back in the day, you know what I mean? The smoothing stuff just turns me off big times. So I don't know why I want to do that. It's probably just the kids these days. But
kids these days and their fancy. Anyway,
I just thought it was interesting the fact that there's universities all over the place. There's businesses all over the place that are just like, you know, trying to get rid of these hundreds and thousands of these like business level PCs that they're swapping out for new stuff. And then where do these things go? And so they found like a secondary market home. As people snatching them up to build like really cheap emulation or minor, you know, gaming PCs or whatever.
I would definitely bust that thing open and like hit it with at least a whole can of air duster because
redo the thermal paste and all that good stuff. But
like I used to do like IT stuff in high school and stuff. Like we would go into these offices, you know, to like you know, replace a hard drive that died or whatever, and open these computers, and it was just like, what the fuck? Were you like chain smoking in front of this thing while you were like using a bandsaw and had the PC like sitting right where the sawdust also lands? Like,
well, you know, the other crazy thing is these are specifically built when they're built for like corporate environments like that. Like, you can just leave this thing on for 5 years and it'll be fine. You know what I mean? Like, it's made to just never be turned off and never be really maintained like you would like a more, I don't know, delicate home.
Does it have an internal or external power supply?
It has, it's like a external, I believe. It's
like a power brick thing. Yeah.
Yeah.
That would be the only thing I would maybe think about like getting a new one of, because like that, I think that would be the only thing that would break on one of these.
I actually had to, because the one I got on eBay doesn't come with one anyway.
Oh,
so
there you go.
But I don't know. It's a really cool thing. It's something to look into if anybody's out there wants a PC and wants to get it kind of cheaper. That ETA Prime YouTube account has just everything you'd ever want to know about emulators and building cheap PCs and stuff like that. And it was also very tempting to want to get the slightly larger one, the fuller size tower or whatever.
That's the problem when you get into PC shit, is it's like there's no good stopping point. It's like you can always spend another $50.
Well, I could have, so like, say I get like a reasonably decent tower version of this, which maybe has a better, little slightly better processor or something like that, but it's going to be almost what I paid for this right now. And then I got to source like the type of graphics card I'd want for it, which I would say could be easily up to $100 even a mile.
I mean, so, I would spend probably like,
so then you know, then I'm getting into the over $200 range, which I didn't want to be in the first place, especially when I started out at a Raspberry Pi, which costs like $40. So
do these come with a copy of Windows installed, or do you install
they do. Some do and some don't. You have to kind of look. But this one, the one I got, comes with a copy of Windows 10 Pro. And it also has, there's like a couple accessories you can get for these things, like a Wi-Fi antenna and stuff like that. So it came with a couple of those things too, but I don't know. It's pretty interesting world that I never
knew about. I didn't know about that at all, because I was always like, because for me, I have a Raspberry Pi with RetroPie set up, you know, like you do, you know, because it's like you spend $100 and fuck around for a weekend and you've got a really cool little emulator thing.
Right.
But it does have limitations, because the Raspberry Pi is designed to be like a, you know, $20 computer, right? So how good is it going to be? But I never wanted to put anything else together, because like for me, I would talk myself up to putting together like a $500 computer that just sits.
That was the dilemma I was finding myself in like these past couple of days researching all this stuff, which is finally, I was really close to getting something more expensive than this or whatever, and going the route where I could do the graphics card and all that stuff. And I was like, you know what, this thing's going to do more than I even need it to do. And it's small and it's reliable, and it's in the price range that I'm willing to spend on something like this.
Yeah, I mean, you could also probably sell it for pretty close to what you paid for it, too.
Yeah.
You know, to some other emulator guy. So if you ever wanted to upgrade.
They go really fast on eBay. I was surprised. Like, I actually had my eye on another one and went and, like, made dinner last night and was, like, decided, oh, I'm going to get that one, and it was already gone. And then the one I ended up actually buying was from a guy that had, like, six of them last night. And I woke up today and there was only two. And so I was like, dude, all right.
Makes me wonder, like, how many people are dumpster diving these? Because, like, when I was in high school, that was a thing that we used to do. And, like, we found some shit that we sold on eBay for a lot of money.
Oh, I believe it. And
that you just, like, threw away, you know, like.
If you go into, like, the you know, secondhand stores, especially like electronics focused secondhand stores and stuff like that, you'll find stuff like this for crazy cheap. The guy on YouTube I was talking about, he built a emulator PC out of a $15 Dell Optiplex that he found that had like a decent CPU, didn't have a hard drive or anything like that, but he just added a hard drive, added some RAM. And for $15, I think like out the door, he had spent like $70 on it total. And it was running like, you know, fairly recent games at like full speed and stuff.
Yeah,
and all the emulation stuff. So
it makes me want to check the thrift store by my house, because I know they have like an entire like 20 foot long rack of PCs, because it's like people just donate them and you can't throw them away. And recycling electronics in my city, aside from a couple days of the year, costs money. So they just,
well,
like,
if you see, like, you know, you're checking eBay right now for these sort of things or whatever.
Go from, like, $56 with 12 bids, $56.15 bids.
Yeah, though, if I was more patient, I probably could have got what I got today for, like, $100 at an auction, or maybe a little less. But I was just like, ah, whatever. 115.
Well, so are you going to install, like, so on Windows, are you going to run RetroPie on it? Or Retro
I'm going to run
Arc
Big
or
Box,
whatever it
I think,
is?
Is
Big
the
Box, okay.
launch box.
I would look into if there's, like, a pre-built, like, Linux image that you could install that has all this shit ready to go.
Yeah.
That you can just, like, dump ROMs into. Because Windows does have a significant overhead. I mean, it's not, like... Yeah. It's not crazy, but like if you have like a lower spec machine, like the lower overhead of like a purpose built like Linux build might be what pushes you over the edge to have like a game that's like just kind of sort of not playable in Windows.
To be
would
playable.
Be like, oh, okay, this is actually this works fine in Linux.
Yeah.
Because you're not.
Well, that's the other thing is like I give a shit about having Windows. You know what I mean? So I will definitely mess around with that sort of stuff because ideally I'd like it to be I switch the arcade cabinet on and it boots into a menu of arcade games. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? That's what I want. I don't want anything else really. So I don't know. Well, I'll have to mess around with all that. I'm
I
sure
would just make
be...
sure that you look into whatever you need to do to retain your Windows license.
Yeah.
Because like if
yeah,
you just like delete everything off your computer, like the key might be on there. And like when you call Microsoft up and be like, hey, I need to authenticate this again or whatever. They'd be like, all right, what's the key? And you're like, I don't know. Yeah. I deleted it.
Yeah. Yeah.
The
guy
on eBay is not going to know. So
no.
just something to keep in mind.
Yeah. Word. So anyway, that's my latest project. I'll keep you up to date on how
things
that's
cool.
Go.
That's awesome.
Sure. It'll be slow going as a kid, but I don't know. Yeah, something to mess around with in my free time.
I think that you should keep track of how much you spent on it. I think that would I'd be interested in reading like, hey, this is actually what I got put together. Yeah. Like particularly if you get into like upgrading the buttons on your thing or whatever,
yeah,
because like
which I do want
to
do.
You might find yourself like being able to write like a pretty good thing on like you know $400 ultimate arcade machine kind of thing.
Yeah, you know, since this arcade 1UP thing came out and I got one, I'm looking into this whole world or whatever, and there's this place called Rec Room, I think Rec Room Entertainment or something like that. They basically make arcade cabinets for you to buy, and then you put like a monitor in it and you put your own, whatever RetroPie or, you know, Raspberry Pi or a PC or whatever. They basically just make the cabinets themselves. And they're pretty cool, but they're like start at like $350 or $400 and they're much higher quality than the arcade 1UPs, which are like, you know, particle board almost. I mean, they're definitely cheapy feeling, but, that's before you even throw in whatever TV or monitor you're going to want to put into it. And then whatever, you know, computing system you're going to want to put into it, but it at least does come with like a well-built cabinet and like good buttons and sticks and stuff like that. So it's not a bad way to like get a jump start, but it's still pricey. I mean, you're still going to be spending $500 or $600 at least by the time you're done. So something like this, like I think I'm, you know, my arcade 1UP was $300 and then I've now spent $150 on this computer. And then if I want to do new buttons and sticks and all the stuff I need to mod the monitor and blah, 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 like I'm probably going to end up spending another $100. So
I just hope that you actually,
I don't know how cheap it is, but
yeah, I hope you actually end up playing this because like I am the worst with projects like this and that, like I'm all about like doing it and building it and all that stuff. Yeah. And like, but actually like using it, like perfect example,
I
like my insane, like aquaponics garden setup. Like I can't even tell you how many hours I've put into like building the perfect setup, like having all my bell siphons working properly, like researching different growth mediums and stuff like that.
Oh yeah.
And I get all built, like last year, like we had an insane amount of tomatoes just like rotted on the ground. I was just like, I can't even do anything with these. Like
throw them at cars. But yeah, no, I'm definitely the same way. Like the journey is a lot of the fun and stuff like this, but based on how much I've been already playing the Mortal Kombat's on my machine, I feel like it'll be fun to play all the other arcade games that I love too.
Yeah.
And the people that come over, everyone is like, I mean, there's like a arcade machine in my living room, so like everyone's like, what the hell is this? So I feel like once I have a more kind of like a better breadth of titles that people can play, because I can't really be like, hey, mother-in-law, you want to hop in and play some Mortal Kombat with me? But I can probably be like, hey, you want to play through The Simpsons with me? And you just mash buttons and we can laugh about it.
Like
so
some
I
of
don't
the
know.
Arcade puzzle games are really easy to understand and stuff like that.
Yeah,
like,
yeah, totally. So we'll see. I will keep you updated on my little
cool.
site.
Yeah, that's awesome. I guess we should talk about iPhone game stuff. unless.
Yeah, so since we spent half our podcast talking
the
about
the celebration for episode 400 is 20 minutes of off-topic chat about emulation.
I feel like for the most part people are always like, oh, my favorite episode was the one where you didn't even talk about mobile stuff until like the last 5 minutes, and I'm like, okay. So I don't know. Sorry if you're looking forward to more mobile discussion this week. Anyway, moving on to that, Cat Quest 2 is feature complete and going through the testing phase and stuff, so it's getting basically towards the finish line. And I think with this one, it's going to launch on other platforms before mobile was what I understood, but I'm not totally sure. So I'd expect it to be like on Steam and Switch and maybe even consoles first before a mobile version comes around, which is probably the right move.
I'm curious, like, if they're going to do the same thing they did with the original, where it was like the mobile version, like they both were the same basic game, but they played so much differently. Like it was like worth playing through it on the Switch and mobile because like they were such different experiences with how the UI worked and everything.
Yeah, and they streamlined the controls for touch too, so that meant they removed like the dodge roll move, which was, they built a lot of the combat in the console versions around being able to dodge roll. And so I don't know, I don't want to throw the word watered down out there, but it kind of was in a way, because you know, you had a lot less you know, tactics and strategy when you're doing combat in the touchscreen game, but it played beautifully on the touchscreen. So it was a nice trade-off, and it was still a fun game anyway. But anyway, so yeah, I'm curious to see. There was kind of a lot of backlash to that from the mobile players that were like, I want the dodge roll too, feeling like they got the short end of the stick. So curious to see if they end up being, you know, one-to-one with these different versions, figuring out a way to make it all work on touchscreen or not. But anyway, if you haven't seen Cat Quest 2, it looks awesome. It's all built around the idea of co-op, and there's a dog in the mix now. So you're playing with a dog as your second player, and then if you don't have an actual human being to play with you, the AI just controls the dog through the story as you play or whatever. But it looks like, I've heard some people complain it looks not different enough from the original, but I feel like that's an okay thing. I'm not mad at that at all. I want just more of the same, which made Cat Quest like one of our favorite games of 2017. So looking forward to the sequel very much. And it's getting very close, according to the latest news from them. So,
huh. Yeah, this sounds cool. I love the original Cat Quest. So like,
it's so fun.
This game could be the worst game ever released, and I'll still play it. I don't care.
Right. Yeah. So in the ongoing saga of Rockstar updating their iPhone games, Grand Theft Auto Chinatown Wars finally got its update to be, work with all the full screens of the iPhone 10 lines and the iPad Pro and all that good stuff. And in general, just work and not be janky on iOS 12 are we on iOS 12 or 11? I forget. Whatever the latest iOS is, it works on that now because it got updated. And this has been, what I mean by the ongoing saga is that over the course of the last year, they have been very slowly updating their existing iPhone games. I think it started with Grand Theft Auto San Andreas in May of last year. And then they've done like Max Payne and then Bully and GTA Vice City. And most recently, I think it was Liberty City Stories.
They're going through all of them.
They've like very slowly been going through all of them and updating them, making sure they work on the latest devices and stuff. And Chinatown Wars has kind of been the one I've been holding out for the most, because I think it's the most fun mobile GTA game.
Yeah, this is by far the best. If you're gonna just buy one Rockstar mobile game, like I think this is the one.
It feels like it was, and it was designed for the Nintendo DS when it first came out in 2009, and it feels like a game that was designed for like mobile play, and that translates really well to the iPhone. Now I think it's super impressive and it's fun to play like the full 3D like Vice City and stuff like that, or Liberty City Stories. But like, I don't feel like it's super practical in like a mobile sense as much as I do with this game,
right?
Where everything feels a little more manageable, and you can even pop in and deal some drugs for like 5 minutes, and then have fun doing that for a few minutes, because the drug dealing mini game is so awesome.
Yeah,
it could just be its own mobile game.
I think the best way to describe the drug mini game is like if you ever played like Drug Wars on the TI-83 calculator, it's like that taken to like an absolute extreme.
Yeah. Yeah, it's so fun. Like, they really should make a mobile spinoff that's just dealing drugs, but I feel like Apple would probably have a problem with that. But anyway, Yeah, so Chinatown Wars now updated. If you owned it before, go grab the update, play it on your iPhone 10 and above, and it'll be all nice and full screen and look good and pretty exciting.
Yeah, so. that's awesome. That's really
And that
really
also
cool.
leaves, there's only one Rockstar game now that needs to be updated. That's Grand Theft Auto 3, so I expect we'll see that.
And I would say that's probably like the weakest one.
Probably. It's interesting from a historical standpoint. Because that was kind of the game. I mean, you look back at that game, and that kicked off open world sandbox games, which is still like the major type of game that they make now.
But it's, that one's like, especially if you have like on a platform where you have like GTA San Andreas and all the other stuff for like basically the same amount of money. Like it's real hard to recommend. Like, oh, play GTA 3 because just like quality of life improvements alone.
Yeah. The graphics are worse, and you can't, like, swim, and there's way less, like, stuff to do. Yeah, like, San Andreas or Liberty City Stories are probably the ones to recommend if you only wanted one. But I think it's cool they have the whole library on there. It's like a little historical perspective of open-world gaming.
Yeah.
Pretty cool. So this was news that came out this week. Farm Punks, which is a game that I saw at GDC that's being published by Noodle Cakes and being developed
fucking
by
Noodle Cake.
Noodle Cake.
I got kicked out of there. Golf Blitz.
Were you not playing enough or what?
I don't know, man. Like the problem is, so this is going to get into a rant. So apologies.
Okay, let's rant before
Before I get into this, I love Noodle Cake and all Noodle Cake games. And I really like everyone that works at the company. And I think you should download everything Noodle Cake makes because it's always really good.
So that was your long-winded way of saying no offense but
yeah, so Ryan Noodle Cake gave me a promo code for Golf Blitz because I harassed him for one before it came out. He was like, oh, join our Golf Blitz team. I don't know if they're called team or clans or whatever. I'm gonna use team because I don't know what they are, but so I join it, and I'm just shit at the game. Like, I'm not good at this. Like, I enjoy playing it, but I'm just not good at it.
I'm bad, too. Yeah.
You know, so I hover around, like, you know, on the low end. Like, I'm having a shitty day, like, 300 trophies. If I'm having, like, a real good day, I'm, like, in the mid-400s, like, pushing up to 500. And that's just kind of, like, seems where I'm stuck.
Okay, yeah.
And so, like, they were, like, so there's a season thing in the game where, like, every season, and I'm not good enough to even really, this is not anything that will ever affect me, so I don't really know how it works, but like I think if you're in like the top percentage, you get like an extra bonus or something like that. And so there were a couple people in their team that were like super into like pro MLG gaming Golf Blitz. And we're just like angry that I was in the like group or team or whatever.
You're dead weight, bro.
Yeah, basically. Sorry. And I was like, dude, I'm sorry. I'm just like not good. Like if you guys want to make this like a pro team, fine. Like, I'm sorry I'm bad. Like, I just play and have fun and unlock cards and fuck around, basically.
Maybe we can make our own clan called like the Shitbags or something.
Well, I'm in a new team. It's called No Putt Stuff.
No Putt Stuff. Yeah. Funky Putt Stuff.
But here's where the true rant comes in, though. That's only the precursor to the rant. So they have this system in the game right now, and admittedly I know the game just launched and they're gonna update a bunch of shit. So like this is kind of an unfair thing to complain about, but at the same time. So you can like sell cards into the team pool of cards that anyone can buy. And there's like that's its own third currency in the game, and you can't buy that currency. The only way you can get it is by selling cards into the team pool,
and then
you use that currency to then like buy cards out of the team pool, which I think are like a pretty like one-to-one thing. Like if I sell a card for five, I think someone else can buy it for five. I don't know, but here's the thing: that currency is tied to the team, and there's a 4-hour cooldown on when you can sell cards again, so you don't just like dump your whole library. And I had been like setting an alarm on my phone, being like, oh man, I need like 20 of these like Garfield cards, and they got them in the inventory. Yeah. So I just need to like save up enough and I can buy them all. So I was like setting an alarm on my phone all day to sell shit into the Noodle Cake, official team. Yeah. Well, I don't know if it's the official team, the team I was invited to, card pool. And then like they'd go on this fucking pro run and kick me out cause I'm a scrub and I lost like days worth of my tokens.
Oh man.
So I was like,
brutal. They chewed you up and spit you out.
Yeah, I was like, man, you guys, this is ice cold. Whoever pro gamers are running the team I was in. But anyway, well,
I know the noodle guys sometimes listen to our podcast, so I'm hoping they listen this week. Shame on you, Noodle Cake.
Listen, if I
would treated your friend that way, how dare you?
Yeah, tell me about it. If I wouldn't like fuck up my computer and my monitor, I would flip my desk right now. I'm so mad.
Yeah. I'm mentally flipping things right now.
Actually, I'm not mad at all. I still really like the game. I just thought it was silly. Like that they were like so mad about like my low trophy count and then like got kicked.
I would look at it. I would also, you know, I don't know who was in your clan or whatever, but I would guess it's probably not directly the Noodle Cake guys, because he's so shit about anything. No. It was probably like the MLG people that they had in there.
It was probably, I want to believe it was Derek directly. Noodle Cake Derek was like, fuck this guy specifically. I'm kicking him out.
That's a super Derek thing to do. So yeah, probably was. But anyway.
That's awesome.
I'm
just talking shit. I love Noodle Cake and I'm just giving a hard time.
Those guys are great. So tangent mode off, back to some additional Noodle Cake news is that Farm Punks is launching. And as I was saying, I saw this game at GDC and it's super awesome. It's like I don't even know how to explain it. It's kind of like a behind the back ball roller, but you're rolling fruit instead. And it's like the terrain is all crazy with like jumps and cliffs and stuff to avoid. And it's just this nutty thing. And so it's that combined with like a clicker / simulation game, because you're going on these runs to earn enough like currency stuff to unlock different types of trees. So you can unlock new types of fruit to then go roll down the hill again and get as far as you can or whatever. Yeah, it's just like a really cool game.
Kind of reminds me of Faily Breaks. Remember that?
Oh, yeah. Very similar to something like that. And so
the Faily people I think made like a bunch of different games that were all the same, like
I feel like they did themselves a disservice by making like too many Faily games instead of just focusing on the one that was popular. But anyway, I just like that a lot of people are taking like the idle gameplay progression but making it a more interesting thing.
Yeah,
so I feel like this is like that satisfying idle game progression, but more than just like clicking. You have to actually go out and play, roll the fruit down the hill, which is cool.
The other thing I really like about this game too is that they've got this really innovative mechanic where you just like kicked out of it if you're not good. That's the thing in all Noodle Cake games.
One of Noodle Cake's exclusive features is that if you don't pull your weight, you're gonna get tossed out on the street. So
the game just deletes itself.
Yeah. So anyway, that is up for pre-order. Farm Punks is available for pre-order on both iOS and Android, and then the expected release date is May 30th, so we'll be able to play this in a couple of weeks.
Yeah, that's cool. Everything Noodle Cake makes is good, releases is good. So,
Speaking of rants, I went on a mild rant this week when I read this interview last Friday, or at least I started reading it. It's like the world's longest interview, but VentureBeat, Dean Takahashi, I forget how his last name is.
Dean's awesome.
Yeah, awesome games journalist guy for decades. Dude's ultimate pro. But he interviewed the creator of Plants vs. Zombies, George Fan, who is also just a very interesting fellow.
We met him at the Fun Plus party a few years ago. And
yeah.
He probably doesn't know or care who we are. But I know who he is, and I'm a huge fan.
Yeah, no, he's a super nice guy. And he's actually works at Wizard of the Coast currently, which is kind of interesting. Awesome. Working on Magic the Gathering. But anyway.
I feel like when your resume says I made Plants vs. Zombies, you can pretty much do whatever, right?
Yeah, that's kind of the case. So George Fan interviewed over at VentureBeat. Very, very long, all-encompassing interview. Kind of about the history of Plants vs. Zombies, how it came about, how he created it, its success, its place in history, all that sort of stuff. Because Plants vs. Zombies just turned 10 like a week and a half ago on like the 5th or 6th of May.
That's crazy. I remember I bought this game on my PC and I thought it was so weird to like, and I think you had to buy it directly from like popcap.com and like download the game.
I don't think it didn't come to Steam until like later.
Because I remember it was like the first like weird little downloadable game that I got.
Yeah. Well, you know what's crazy is, and they mentioned this in the interview, and I touched on it a bit in the thing I wrote, but looking back 10 years later, Plants vs. Zombies is considered more a mobile game. It's remembered more as a mobile game than anything else, even
Get
though it's
the
been
fuck
on.
Out of here. It is not. Are you kidding me?
Well, yeah. When you think of Plants vs. Zombies, wouldn't you think of, like, iPhone, iPad?
Well, I don't, I mean...
What you think of, no, well, that's a game I play on my desktop.
So it's probably one of those things where, like, I'm sure that most people that know the game probably played it on their iPhone, but, I mean, I played it when as an OG casual gamer.
Yeah.
You know,
I can get that. I mean, I feel like you could say the same thing about another popular game like Bejeweled or something like that.
Oh, where yeah, for sure.
I was playing Bejeweled on my computer back in, whatever, 2003 or something.
Here's a deep cut for it. I was playing Bejeweled on my Palm Pilot.
Ooh, on my on my Palm Trio, I had Bejeweled, and yeah. So anyway, all of that, it's a great interview. You should go read it. I have a link to it in my story here. Just really, really interesting to hear what George Fan is up to nowadays. He just released his new game, which is Octageddon, on Switch this week.
Did he self-publish that, or who is it?
I don't know for sure. I think it's published by somebody else, but... But Octageddon came out a couple years ago on PC and seems to be a pretty awesome game. So that's one of those, another one of those Steam games that's like, oh, I'll actually play this now because it's on Switch. So
yeah, for sure.
You play as an octopus who's angry and wants to destroy everything, but you can, the twist is you can affix various elements to your eight arms and become this like whirling dervish of destruction with all these different appendages or whatever. So anyway. That's all besides the point. One of the things that struck me about this interview was him talking about Plants vs. Zombies and kind of like the time and place it came out on mobile. Mobile was really going through a transition phase at the height of Plants vs. Zombies' popularity, where free-to-play was kind of taking over and becoming like the thing that it is today. And it's interesting because Plants vs. Zombies on iPhone launched as $2.99, a fully paid game, right?
Yeah.
And remember when the sequel was announced and it was announced it was going to be free to play and people lost their shit?
Oh, yeah.
That was a big deal. And so George Fan actually touches on that. He's like, you know, Plants vs. Zombies became the biggest, most popular thing ever. And they approached me and were like, hey, we want to do a sequel. And for one, he was kind of like, you know, I feel like the first game was everything I wanted to do with that concept. And so like a sequel to me, first of all, it's not really that interesting. You know what I mean? Cause I feel like I've already been there, done that. And I'm not sure what I could really bring to the table. So he already kind of wasn't interested in it. But the other thing was that, this is like months after EA bought PopCap.
Mm-hmm.
And so EA was dictating basically this sequel is going to be free to play. And that also super turned him off to the point where he declined to work on the sequel of the game that he invented. And then
can you imagine how shitty that's gotta feel? Like, you make this thing that you really like, that people really like and everything else, and like another company comes along and just wants to like ruin it to the point that you're just like, no, I don't want anything to do with this.
Pretty much. And it is kind of a bummer, because I don't know, I feel like I don't know, it's just sad. But yeah, he kind of cuts the core thing of the thing to do with free-to-play games, and this actually is what ultimately led to him leaving PopCap. It was after Plants vs. Zombies 2 came out and everything. It was sometime in 2013, but by that time, they were just full steam ahead. EA and PopCap were like, free-to-play games, free-to-play games, free-to-play games. So
I mean, everyone
was kind of just like over it anyway at that point. But he kind of says, he kind of sums it up really well, saying that, you know, talking about the evolution of the App Store at that time, I guess I'll say that not all of the ways things were evolving led to games being more fun overall. There are some aspects of this business model that make it so you're not making games to be fun anymore. You're playing to, you know, here's the stuff that addicts players, that makes people come back. You're mm-hmm. implementing these strategies to hook people, but they're not necessarily having fun with your game anymore. They're compelled to play because they need to increase their level or feel like they're making some kind of progression. But if you ask them, hey, take a step back, strip away all of this, is the moment-to-moment gameplay fun for you? In a lot of cases, I bet the answer would be no. And that, like, cuts to the core of exactly what I've come to feel about free-to-play games lately. And we've talked about this on the podcast before, where it feels like you're just spinning your wheels. And there comes a point, even if you really love a free-to-play game that you play daily and blah, 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 there comes a point in time where you look back and you're just like, what am I doing with my time? How am I spending this time? Is it meaningful? Am I even having fun anymore? Or am I just feeling pressured to play so that I don't miss out on the next thingamajig, or I don't check in for the daily whatever or whatever? And that is kind of like where I'm at with free to play nowadays, and it's something that the term you coined, I think, was freemium fatigue. Where we all kind of have this fatigue of, like, you know, we've talked about it with new games before too, where a free to play game comes out and you launch it and you're like, this is fun, I'm enjoying it in the first 15 or 20 minutes, and then you hit that, like, free to play menu and you're just like, I'm out. Like, I just can't.
Yeah.
I can't do all this stuff.
So this reminds me of a story back from 2011, believe
it
or not, where
this.
I had gone to this was back when they were trying to do, like, multiple GDCs in the US.
This was, like, in Austin or something, right?
Yeah, well, so it used to be, I don't remember if they call it, like, GDC South or GDC Austin, and they changed it, like, GDC Online. And 2011 was, like, the turning point for these shows, where they went from, like, here's how to make a fun game mechanic, and here's how to market a really fun game, to here's how to use metrics to determine if a button should be purple or pink for monetization.
Yeah.
And, like, so as part of the sessions, they did this, like, they used to, I don't know if they still do this or not, probably not, because they were always pretty spicy, but they did these, like, rant panels where, like, big developers and stuff would just, like, rant. And this one, like, they ranted about the show. And
that's awesome.
Like, Graham's whole thing was, he was like, you know, we're not developers here anymore. Like, we're designing, like, engagement mechanics and, like, casino bullshit and all sorts of stuff like that. Like, he even, like, argued that, like, monetization shouldn't be in the game developer's vocabulary.
Yeah, it's totally true, and it's kind of sad, because you think games should be designed to be, like, fun and enjoyment, and maybe in some cases, you know, saying something, making a statement or something like that. The last thing on your mind when you're making a game should be, like, how do I get somebody, like, hopelessly addicted so that they feel like they have to play this game every day?
If they recorded this session and it's online somewhere, that would be the biggest mind fuck to watch it
now,
from the perspective of, like, what has happened in the 8 years since.
Right.
Because, like, this was, like, right when these guys, like, these very, very smart, like, industry veterans were, like, really identifying this turning point.
Yeah.
And it was easy to dismiss as, like, oh, you guys are just pissed because, like, you know, you didn't like the talks this year or, like, whatever else. But, like, this isn't that big of a deal.
And now you look at it now and it's just like sharks circling the chum bucket.
Yeah.
It's just gross world we live in. So definitely check out this story. I kind of summarized the interview stuff. And ranted for a long while about what I hate about free-to-play games nowadays and why I'm kind of over it, and why things like Game Club and even Apple Arcade are, I think, a step in the right direction of sort of a premium game mini renaissance.
Hell yeah.
Hopefully. So we'll see what happens with all that. But then also check out that full interview with George Fan, because it's just awesome. And dude's awesome. Great game designer and very interesting person. So check that out.
Hell yeah to all those things.
Hell yeah. Moving on, Nimblebit's Lego Tower is available for pre-order, and it says the release date's going to be July 1st. If you hadn't seen this yet, they announced this on the final day of GDC this year.
Yeah.
And it's partnering up with Lego to build a tiny tower that very much looks like it animates and stuff like the Lego movie. It's just awesome.
Yeah, they've been working on this for a very long time.
And these two things just feel like a match made in heaven, like building blocks, like Lego to build a building and add floors to it. And then the little minifigs look just like, you know, perfect little citizens for your tower. So
they've been doing all sorts of really neat promotions around this too, where, like, people are, like, building floors.
Yeah. I wish I had caught wind of that. It's over now, but I wish I had caught wind of that, because you could actually design different types of floors through the Lego creators website or whatever. You can submit ideas. I totally would have posted about that or submitted something myself, but
yeah, they posted a few on Instagram and I was like, damn, those are, like, shockingly good for
Look, the tiny tower, and not just tiny tower fans, but the pocket planes, pocket trains, all those pocket frogs, the fan bases for those are just so crazy and engaged and just rabid. So I'm not surprised at all that there was, like, a lot of interest in fan created levels or whatever.
I've seen a lot of people, like, well, I don't know about a lot, but people dumping on this for, like, oh, Nimblebit just re-released a tiny tower.
Yeah, lazy. A lot of weird negative, like, reaction.
Whatever, dude. Like, the thing that I discovered with Game Club that has been pretty fascinating to me is that I originally thought that, like, our primary audience was going to be, like, people like us, so like really remember Hookchamp and really like Hookchamp and all that stuff. But like, it almost kind of seems like there's this potentially larger secondary audience of people that are like, dude, I've never heard of this game before, and it's fucking great.
Yeah. No, that's a really big thing. That crosses my mind all the time when I write about like an old game that gets a new update or something like that. In a lot of cases, even if the update's not significant, I feel the need to post about it because I'm like, hey, the last time Touch Arcade talked about this game was 2015. And between then and now, there's probably a whole lot of people that have like iPhones or iPads that like gaming on them that weren't even gaming back then and might not even know this exists. I feel like I'm posting about it as a PSA of like, hey, this old game got updated and it's a really good game you probably don't know about, you know?
Yeah, I mean, or there's a very realistic possibility too that like maybe they've had an iPhone since like, you know, iPhone 3GS or whatever, but just like never really gotten to gaming on it until the last couple of years.
Right.
Like,
yeah, there's such a wide variety of stuff out there that I bet, you know, a lot of like, people don't know about.
Yeah, like as dumb as it is, like for a lot of people, shit like Candy Crush or 2048 or stuff like that was what made them realize like, oh, damn, like I can play games on my phone that are cool. Right. This is neat.
And then the funny thing about people complaining to Nimblebit about just making another Tiny Tower is ask them how all their non-Tiny Tower games have performed. They've tried to branch out multiple times, and nothing's ever really stuck, even though they've come out with some really awesome game concepts. So that's why they keep making Tiny Tower.
So this will be good. I don't know. It's a solid format Lego edition.
Well, it is, too. Like, I was obsessed with Tiny Tower, and then, you know, a year or two later, I played the Vegas version and loved that. And then there was the Tiny Death Star, the Star Wars version, that had a terrible kind of lifespan. And we don't talk about that anymore. But so I'm at the point where I'm like, damn, I haven't played a Tiny Tower game in a while, and I love Lego, so I'm gonna be all over this when it comes out.
Yeah.
I'm excited about it. So.
Yeah.
Moving on, we've got some PUBG Mobile news, which is kind of interesting. The gameplay management system update is rolling out to different versions of the game internationally. What's that?
What does that even mean?
Okay, so. I can't remember what country this originated in. It might have been in China.
We talked about that last week.
So China, PUBG Mobile in China actually got replaced with Tencent's own version, PUBG ripoff.
Yeah,
but
Game of Peace or whatever.
The actual PUBG Mobile for a long time in other countries, and I don't know if it was due to regulations or what, but they had this gameplay management system thing come out that it would occasionally remind you with pop-ups and stuff to, hey, take a break. Maybe don't play PUBG Mobile. That sort of thing. So it was sort of like trying to look out for the well-being of its players because there's just so many millions, tens of millions of people playing this game, and they're playing it like nonstop. And I don't know if the government had to get involved or if it was just, you know, PUBG deciding like, hey, we need to do something because there's too many people playing. But I mean, you saw stuff like that happen over the last couple decades with like MMOs and stuff like that. Like someone dying in the internet cafe because they were on the MMO for 72 hours straight or something like that. This whole gameplay management system that warns you that you might be playing too much and reminds you to take breaks and stuff like that is now rolling out to other versions of the game. I don't think it's quite hit the US yet, but it is expanding in different territories. So. I just think that's an interesting thing. I just thought it was worth mentioning that there's this this sort of babysitter update for PUBG Mobile in case you're playing too much.
I guess.
So I don't know. I don't know if it's a good thing. I don't know if it's a bad thing. I don't know if it's an Orwellian thing. It's just a thing, I guess.
Pretty weird by me, but I don't know.
Yeah, it's definitely weird. Moving on, there's the Pokemon Company has just released Pokemon Rumble Rush in Australia on Android. Looks like it's probably a soft launch sort of thing. The interesting thing about this is actually a game called Pokéland that was announced 2 years ago, and we covered it back then. And Pokéland actually looked like a mobile spin-off of the 3DS game Pokémon Rumble.
I think we even speculated that like that could come to mobile someday.
Oh, yeah, totally. And so Pokémon Rumble is kind of like a very lightweight action RPG with Pokemon, basically, with like real-time combat and stuff. It's kind of like a beat-em-up with Pokemon. So that's on 3DS, and then Pokéland was seemingly like a very mobilized spin-off of that, free-to-play, and like I think it played in Portrait and all that stuff. So it's like a lighter weight version of that lightweight game. Now it appears that was a couple years ago. and it was in soft launch and all that good stuff. So now it appears it's still a thing and has soft launched on Android in Australia as Pokemon Rumble Rush. So now you can tell the connection between that and the 3DS game is pretty clear, that this is a form of that. But anyway, I can't imagine this not coming out to everywhere eventually, especially if it's still a thing and it's being soft launched in a country. It's probably not too far off. And I just look at it as like, think of something like Dragalia Lost, which is just doing gangbusters still.
Yeah, for sure.
And plays super well, even if it's not really our cup of tea. But if you could have something that's like that game, but with Pokemon in it, I feel like that's going to be a big deal.
Yeah, that would be absolutely bananas.
Yeah. So if you ever if you remember the name Pokaland from being announced a couple years ago, that is now Pokemon Rumble Rush, and or Pokemon Scramble SP in Japan. And that's going to be a thing coming to mobile probably pretty soon, I would guess.
Yeah, that's cool.
Based on it being soft launched. Here's a funny story. Probably the last story I expected to write the other night. Steam Link finally launched on the App Store. And if you remember, throughout all of last year...
And didn't it come out at like 10 p.m. or something crazy like that too?
That's when I got the email. I don't know when it actually came out, but... So Steam Link was announced in May of last year, and so like just over a year ago, and it was basically like what the Steam Link hardware is going to do, but it was going to do it through an app on your phone or your tablet, where you're essentially on your own home network, able to stream your Steam library to your phone or tablet, and either pair it up with a physical controller, or it'll have workable touchscreen controls, so you can play your Steam games on your mobile device via streaming. Really cool, useful type thing. A lot of people were really stoked about
this. They did like a whole media blitz too. They like sent me a test flight build and the controller, which is around here. Oh, it's right here.
Steam controller.
Yeah, actually have it right here.
Oh, look at that. Yeah, Steam controller. So, Steam
that's another kind of sucks, but that's its own thing.
This whole thing. They announced it, and then like a week and a half later or something like that, Apple announced that they had rejected it. And it wasn't just that they rejected it. They had already approved the Steam Link, which is why Valve went ahead announcing it to the world. And some point between the announcement and the launch date that was set for a couple weeks later, Apple said, no, we're not cool with this. You can't release this on the App Store anymore, even though they had already approved it.
Yeah.
So basically, we sort of surmised that it was the fact that you could, because it was streaming Steam, and you could go to Steam and like buy games through, you know, the stream, that was Apple wasn't okay with that.
That was also based on an assumption, because like they very rapidly updated the test flight version to remove the ability to buy things.
Yeah. So it was basically you could only stream things you'd already bought through Steam, and it was just a stream one way. Stream and that's it. So you couldn't buy anything through the app anymore, and you'd think that would make Apple happy, but they still never approved it. And it sort of became like a mystery as to why not. It released on Android as planned. Android people have been enjoying it for a year, and since then, you know, there had already been other desktop streaming apps available on the App Store even before Steam Link was announced, and they could let you could do like Moonlight and navigate to Steam and like buy stuff through Steam through Moonlight, you know what I mean? So it's like weird that other apps were able to do these things that apparently Apple had a big issue with, and they just never approved the Steam Link app until randomly today out of nowhere, or this week out of nowhere, it just launched, and they sent out a very simple press release about it being like, hey, the Steam Link app is out on iOS.
So here's something interesting. Yeah. I heard a rumor from someone who historically is super connected to this sort of thing that I trust and has been right about most stuff, that Valve was kind of told on like no uncertain terms that like, not even bother, this will never get approved, like just don't waste your time, which is why it's been gone for a year. Like, and then you have it just randomly approved again like 2 days after Apple loses like a major Supreme Court case about how they're like potentially a monopoly and stuff,
so,
and whether or not an antitrust suit can go through.
I've seen a lot of people mention this, and I don't think one has anything to do with the other, because who at Apple is going to be like, oh man, we got to get a hold of Valve and make sure they release their Steam Link app because this is just going to add fuel to this whole fire or whatever. Like, I feel like that's the last thing on Apple's mind anywhere. Maybe if Valve reached out to them and was like, hey guys, look, it'll only help your case if you don't reject apps like ours because,
I mean,
you know,
I have no idea, you know, like obviously we're reading tea leaves, but like it's the timing is so weird.
But it's also that Supreme Court ruling, in case anybody out there isn't familiar, is that the Supreme Court has ruled that consumers are able to sue Apple because they think that they are a monopoly because of they force you to download apps through the App Store only and nowhere else, as opposed to Android, where you can go through the Google Play Store or you can sideload apps like you can on a PC or whatever. Well,
but the prevailing theory as to why these two are related is because, like, so the Supreme Court decision is that they can now go back and sue them, right? So as part of that lawsuit, which I'm sure there's 10 bazillion lawyers that are just drooling at the thought of this, like, massive 10-year class action suit for, like, a multi-billion dollar business sector of Apple. They're going to gather all sorts of evidence and stuff to, like, prove, like, well, no, like, Apple is a monopoly and they do all sorts of unfair stuff. And, like, here's example X, Y, and Z. And
that could be.
I don't know. Yeah. Like,
I think it's plausible. I just feel like this isn't like the at the front of Apple's mind as a priority for all of this stuff that they need to rush out and like approve this app or anything.
No, but I mean, like, something could have happened in the last like couple days where it's like, oh shit, like maybe we should just approve that because you know what might happen.
But like the Supreme Court ruling too is not anything to do with Apple is or isn't a monopoly.
No,
it's
strictly
the fact that consumers are able to sue Apple over it. And Apple's argument is, well, consumers shouldn't be able to sue us. It should be developers because they're the ones that set prices and they're the ones that sell through our store.
A really zany argument to make. Like, because Apple effectively is saying, like, okay, yeah, but you're not the right person to sue us.
Yeah.
Like, which, I mean, like, I guess that works in this context, but it seems really strange. So, it's like getting pulled over by a police officer because like your taillight's out and you're like, my taillight's fine, I was just speeding and smoking weed, like what's your problem? So I don't know, like it's the whole thing is weird to me. I have no idea.
Well, I just hate shit like this anyway. I at the end of the day I'm like, what's Apple supposed to do? Like, developers set the prices themselves. So they can, you know, I don't think, you know, the argument is that they're passing that 30% Apple tax on to the consumers by charging more for their apps or whatever. And maybe they are, I don't know, but that's any other aspect of business is the same way. Like if you want your stuff carried in a store, they're going to mark it up a little bit too. And that cost gets passed to you or whatever, you know? So I don't think it's really anything new. I'm very curious to see if any of these cases do go to court, like how they end up getting ruled and whatever. But I don't know. Maybe the two are related, maybe not.
I don't know. I saw a lot of like interesting. This is coming from someone that loves the X-Files and shit like that. Yeah. So you know, like I'm all about a good conspiracy theory, right? But like, I just saw a lot of interesting takes on Twitter that had me going, I could see that.
Yeah.
Which, you know, who knows? Like that stuff's usually just entertaining to read anyway. So
whatever. Well, whatever the case, it's pretty awesome that Steam Link is out. It seems to work really well. Having you stream your Steam library, you have to have a newer device. You have to have a pretty solid connection. It only works over 5 GHz Wi-Fi. So there's certain cases where it won't work. But another interesting tidbit about this is it works with MFI controllers and it works with touchscreen option. But it also, you can link it to the Steam controller, which I find kind of interesting that you can use a Steam controller with iOS in that way.
Yeah.
So that's kind of cool too. But Steam Link, it's free. If you have Steam and you have a fast enough network and you want to play your Steam games on your phone while you're on the toilet or something, then you go.
I would just like keep your expectations in check because like there is latency with this. Like even with a, because like I have, you know, whatever the top end wireless thing is, AC or I don't know, whatever the fucking expensive one is.
You're not going to like play Battlefield and stuff.
But yeah, you're not going to play Twitch-based games, but like if
play,
you...
Play like card games and stuff.
Or like Civilization. Kind of stuff. Like turn-based stuff or just things that like don't require like really fast reactions work totally fine.
Yeah.
Just everything else is kind of weird. But like the only other thing I have to say on the Supreme Court case is like, I think that this whole thing has really shown how ridiculous it is that like technology moves so fast, but our legal system and our government does not. Like the fact that like Apple and the plaintiff Pepper are like arguing about whether or not you can sue Apple for a monopoly on a digital distribution channel based on case precedent from like almost 100 years ago about selling fucking bricks.
Yeah.
Is absurd on every level.
The Supreme Court decision is the result of this all started up in like 2013 or something like that. So this has been ongoing for 5 years and it only just now got a decision. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's just slow as molasses. And so like you said, say they do bring a class action suit
It's gonna take another decade at least
another decade of just whatever. So
and like will anyone give a shit in you know like 2029 when this gets settled?
I really
like
doubt it. We're gonna be on to some new shit, you know?
People will be like App Store, I don't remember, I haven't used that in years, like kind of thing. Or I mean, who knows?
It is really ridiculous. It's probably just more than anything we need to really overhaul a lot of that stuff for the new age of having things be more instantaneous than the way they are.
So whatever. Who knows? I don't know. We'll see. If nothing else, check out Steam Link because it's cool. So
Steam Link is free and it's cool. And if you have Steam, you should do it.
Yeah.
Moving along, we got the Minecraft Earth being announced. Last week, we talked about the teaser where Minecraft had some sort of augmented reality project in the works that has been revealed to be Minecraft Earth. And it appears to be, I would say it's kind of hard to tell by the teaser or the little trailer they released. But it seems like it's kind of like a mixture of Pokemon Go type stuff, but also just like building things in augmented reality and projecting them in the real world just for funsies. So I think that's kind of cool too. And the trailer shows like a girl skating around town and it shows kind of like these little kind of like mobile device windows showcasing like Minecraft stuff being projected in her world or whatever. And so they have like, you know, the creatures from Minecraft and the street is lined with trees from Minecraft or whatever. But then she skates by this girl who's sitting in like a restaurant and through the window, you can see she's like building a little like house and like a little yard and like her own little, Minecraft like home basically, in augmented reality on the table of the restaurant. And I think that's kind of like an extra layer too. So it's not strictly like Pokemon Go, only running out in the world and battling people and catching monsters or anything like that. It seems like it's more like they describe like friends getting together and doing like cooperative builds in augmented reality. So like imagine going to a park with your buddy and like building a giant castle out of blocks in augmented reality or something like that, which I think is super cool.
Yeah.
So anyway, I don't know. It's not totally clear what this is going to be yet, but I think it's a neat thing. And I think Sean tweeted talking about something on Twitter that Minecraft is 10 years old now. And that just kind of blows my mind because it's still one of the most popular things.
Every now and again, like I'll see like a meme on Reddit about like Minecraft nostalgia. And I'm like, what the fuck?
That trips me out when people play games from like the late 2000s and are like, oh my God, I remember when I was a kid and I used to play like, you know, Super Mario Brothers Wii U or something like that. And I'm like, what? Like you were a kid then? That's, oh man, I'm old. But yeah, that's the reality we live in too with like newer generations of people. Like Minecraft is like a game that by now a lot of people have grown up on.
Yeah.
Like if you were 10 when Minecraft came out and you got into it, you're 20 now. You know what I mean? And that's crazy. So yeah, Minecraft Earth is a thing. I'm sure there will be a lot more announced on it soon, but it looks really cool so far. You should definitely check out the trailer.
Cool skateboard trailer. Hey, speaking of skateboards, have you ever ridden a longboard?
I have. They're very difficult.
Are they really? Because, like, I don't know. I think I need, like, bigger wheels. I just ride my skateboard around, you know?
Mm.
And basically, like, the extent of tricks I do is, like, ollieing up onto, like, a you know, the sidewalk if, like, there's not a good curb or something like that.
Oh, dude. Get a filmer board.
Filmer board.
If you went to the skate shop and you were like, "Yeah, I want a filmer board," basically the guys that film skating have their own sort of special skateboards that they ride that have much larger rubberier wheels so that if you hit like a rock or something, you're not going to go flying. And
but it's not a longboard. It's just like,
no, it's a regular skateboard,
taller trucks and bigger wheels.
Yeah, you could add a couple risers to your trucks to have clearance, but you don't even have to get crazy with it, but just slightly larger and softer wheels will make your life way better for just being pulled around.
Yeah.
Sometimes you call them a cruiser board too, but
I actually have one for
skating around, going places.
Yeah, because like that's why I bought the skateboard. It was like going places. I was like, man, this actually like I don't remember this like sucking.
Yeah, and yeah, you'll okay.
Because I remembered like the. I guess like the inverse, because I was like, when I bought mine, I was like, oh, it's like the smallest, hardest wheel you got.
Yeah, that's how it was when I started skating. It was like bearing covers were the thing. But like even, I don't know if you can really see, but like these wheels aren't even like crazy bigger than normal wheels, but they're bigger than the ones I rock on like my regular skateboard. So
yeah.
Yeah, if you went into a skate shop and you're like, I want like Filmer wheels, they'll know what you're talking about.
All right. I'll go into Zoomies and see if the kid working there gives half a shit about helping me.
Maybe
spoilers, he will not.
Yeah. Moving along from skateboard tangent. Last story I had to talk about really from Touch Arcade stuff is that all the Beamdog iOS games are on crazy discount right now. They're all $2. So that means the Baldur's Gate games and what other games do they have?
Yeah, Baldur's Gate, Baldur's Gate 2, Icewind Dale, Planescape Torment,
Dale is what I've been thinking.
And Siege of Dragonspear.
Yeah, yeah. All their games right now are $1.99, which is pretty ridiculous when you think of the scope of the Baldur's Gate games and stuff like that. You could play those for just hundreds of hours. So yeah, $2 a piece. If you haven't picked any of these up yet, just wanted to mention it so you can go check out that sale.
Yeah, dude, when Icewind Dale was new, like, I had friends that, like, that was the game they played for, like, a year.
Mm-hmm.
Like no joke. Like, the amount of content and shit.
Yeah.
And that was, like, back in the day when it was like, oh, my God, I finally scraped together $50. I'm going to buy a computer game. Like, mm-hmm. That was what you went for, was like, all right, yeah. I don't need to buy another game now. I have this thing that I can play forever. So, like,
yeah,
that's the thing to get.
Now that will cost you $2. That's
yeah,
pretty
that's
nuts.
Insane.
Yeah.
Well, that's the last story we got. I guess I can get back to skitching outside any car that drives by.
Yeah, definitely look into getting some bigger wheels. You'll be a lot happier if you're if your dogs are pulling you around and that's all you're doing.
I was having one of those days where my brain was half broken and I didn't remember what to buy and bought the opposite thing I should have gotten. So,
well, the thing is, it's like when you mention longboards, like those Sector 9s and stuff like that, it's like 100% different experience.
Oh,
like,
is it really? I've never ridden one, so
it's so difficult. I mean, I'm sure you warm up to it eventually, and I see people get around town on them pretty well, but like somebody that's used to riding a regular size skateboard, I get on those and like I can't do anything. I'm a danger to myself and others on one of those.
Can you still like ollie reasonably easy with bigger wheels?
Yeah, as long as you don't go too big.
Okay.
You'll be all right, but just softer and bigger than normal street wheels and
yeah. Seriously, I was like, "What's the smallest, hardest Spitfire wheel you got? I'll take those." Yeah.
Well, the other thing is, you don't want to if you hit a rock with your dog pulling you and you're going at a pretty good clip. That's not fun either. So, anyway, all right, that seems like the end of our show. So, thank you so much for listening to the episode 400. Go off on tangents extravaganza.
That's what people like, though. So.
Show.
Hopefully,
if you like our tangents, please let us know.
You know what? Everyone that listens to this is going to be like, you know what? I know what kind of skateboard wheels to get and how to build a cool arcade cabinet and not to join a team with noodle cakes.
Yeah.
Three,
we're
three
full of,
important
full
takeaways.
Of useful advice. Yeah. So, yes, please let us know if you like the crazy tangents or if you want us to stick more to mobile games or whatever. You can let us know by shooting us an email at podcast@tetrarcade.com or in our Discord chat, which is discord.gg/tetrarcade. You can get a hold of us there and harass us and tell us we suck or that we're awesome. Yeah. Touch Arcade is primarily sponsored by primarily supported by our Patreons through patreon.com/TouchArcade. So if you consider visiting that site and considered giving us some support so we can keep doing what we're doing. We would really appreciate it. And you also get some special bonuses like a video version of this podcast where you can see us talk about our skateboards and you can watch my beard grow in real time. I'm going to let it go until hockey's over. So that could conceivably be like another few weeks. It's already getting pretty long.
And that's another a commitment way right there. Wow.
I'm too superstitious to shave my beard during playoff hockey. So
well, the Sharks are doing good, right?
What's that?
Sharks are doing good, aren't they?
There's a game on tonight, so I don't want to say too much, but we are in the semifinals. So
see, like a true Chicago sports fan, the sport ceases to exist for me as soon as the team that I like loses.
Yeah. That's funny. And what did I say? Oh, another way you can support Touch Arcade is by doing your Amazon shopping through toucharcade.com/Amazon. We'll get a little tiny slice of anything you would be buying through Amazon anyway, and you can keep it out of that greedy Jeff Bezos' pocket and send it our way instead. Other than that, I think that's everything.
Can I shill Game Club?
Oh, yes. Please shill Game Club.
GameClub.io. We're bringing all the best games back, baby.
Yeah, I don't think we had a game. We've generally been posting about whatever games you announce or whatever. We didn't do that this week, which is why we didn't talk about it on the podcast. But we love what Game Club's doing. And yeah, GameClub.io to sign up for the early testing stuff. And in fact, Monday is going to be Plunderland, which is like the definition of a lost classic. And so you have a thing going on right now where if you join your Discord chat, you can actually get access to Plunderland right now, correct?
Yeah, discord.gg/gameclub. Okay, or if you want the old links to stuff that has come out since gameclub.io/beta has all the other
gameclub.io/beta, and that'll be links to all the test flight stuff. And there's 10 games available now, right? Like Rocket Ski Racing, I think, was the newest one from this week.
It'll be 11 with Plunderland on Monday.
So Monday will be the 11th game. So go sign up for that. You can get access to 11 games for free and help them test them before you eventually launch these things someday.
Yeah, really, really good feedback from people so far. Because we don't have what's really actually tricky with beta testing stuff in Apple land is that there's no way for you to downgrade your system software.
Right.
So some bugs, people that haven't upgraded iOS 12 yet for some reason.
Yeah.
We're finding a lot of crazy stuff from people that are like, oh, I have an iPhone 7. Mm-hmm. I never upgraded iOS 12 because I thought it would run worse, but these games are crashing and I can't grab my iPhone 7 and downgrade it to iOS 12. That kind of stuff's super important. So the more people we get testing these, the better. So if you want to do me a solid, I would appreciate it, but
do a solid.
If not,
go to discord.gg/gameclub and also hit up discord.gg/touch arcade.
Two Discord. People are in a lot of Discords these days. I was really surprised how willing people were to join the Game Club Discord. Cause I was I don't know. I don't think
I've joined yet, but I used to be really resistant to wanting to join any others because I'm like, I can't keep up with all this.
No, that's the thing. I'm in
the thing 15... is you can just mute channels you don't really care about.
I mean, let's see.
I've joined a bunch. I'll find the Game Club one.
Part of that. Yeah. At least 16 Discords, and I don't know.
It's not a big deal. You just pay attention to the ones you want to at any given time. And Discord's a great thing. So anyway.
Yeah.
Enough tangents for one week. That's the episode 400 spectacular. We'll be back next week with episode 401. Thank you so much for listening, and we'll see you again next week on another episode of the Touch Arcade Show.
See ya.